Is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. A Chicago pastor suing the Trump administration after he says ICE agents shot him in the head with a pepper ball. The alleged incident happened earlier this month during a protest outside an ICE facility. A senior Homeland Security official says Reverend David Black was blocking ICE from doing its job and actually gave agents the middle finger. Speaking to ABC News, Reverend Black denied the accusation and explained why he joined the class action suit.
I hope to see accountability and boundaries. I hope to see that this federal administration is being held back from brutalizing civilians in Chicago neighborhoods and around the country.
Today, former President Joe Biden finished a round of radiation therapy treatment for the aggressive form of prostate cancer he was diagnosed with after leaving office. A spokesperson says Biden had been receiving treatment at Penn Medicine Radiation Oncology in Philadelphia. It's unclear if he'll need any further radiation therapy. This is ABC News.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.7 WRCE.
The Bucks are ready to go. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks kick off their season at home this Wednesday night when they take on the Washington Wizards at Fiserv Forum, and it'll be the first time they face off against former Buck Chris Middleton, who they traded to Washington last season. Doc Rivers says they're planning a special video tribute to Middleton during the game. How come?
Because he's a Buck for life, no matter where he's at. Pat Connaughton's a Buck for life, Brooke Lopez, and so we lost three of those guys from last year. Chris will be the first one coming back. And, you know, the Milwaukee fans are phenomenal. So, you know, it's so funny. The one thing I'm not worried about is, like, usually the question, if this was a lot of other places, are you think the fans are going to boo? Of course not. They're not. We traded him. He won a title for us, and he's a Buck. And he's part of this community. Good as he was all on the court, I thought he was a superstar off the court. Him and his wife, with all the things they did for the community.
That's the Bucks head coach Doc Rivers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
During Medicare's open enrollment, it's common to receive mailers and see TV commercials that say you're missing out on some benefits. Before you respond to these ads, turn to Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol, here to help you prevent, detect, and report Medicare fraud. Don't be misled into enrolling in a plan that doesn't meet your health needs or cover your medications. Visit the Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol website at smpwi.org.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Big weekend, big rally. And look, Republicans framed it. It was Antifa. There were Marxists. Hate America. In fact, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, called it the terrorist wing of the Democratic Party. That's who was going to show up. So the somewhere between 5 and 7 million people, all Antifa Marxist terrorists and responsible for not having the government open. It's them. It's the terrorists who showed up. It's them. They're unpatriotic. They're a threat to law and order. Remember all that? Going to have to call out the National Guard. Strong military presence. And look, it's just these left-wingers, these terrorists on the left, they want instability. They want to disrupt our peace. Yeah, they want bad things to happen. And look, a lot of the red hat stuff I got from people were like, look, they're gonna break windows. They're going to set dumpsters on fire. It's going to be horrible. They're going to be bad things. They're going to hurt our police. And I'm going, no, I think you're thinking about January 6th. I think you're thinking about what happens when Republicans get together and try and overthrow a government. You know, just maybe that's it. Now, the weird thing is that was before. And like everything, there are two stories. There's the before and the after. And still pushing the hate. You know, after the rally, we keep hearing the odes. It was a hate America. Even though it was peaceful, these people still hate. They hate America. They have anti-American motives now is the phrase that I keep hearing. And, you know, there are radicals in the crowd. There were radicals. Anybody who got out and protested, radicals, because they're trying to undermine whatever the you-know-what traditional family values means. And they want division. And you go, really? Is that what you got out of the weekend? Because what that tells me is you weren't paying attention. You're in the right-wing bubble. Because that was the right-wing message. They couldn't attack really what was going on because people were peaceful. People were doing what constitutionally they are entitled to, seeking redress of grievance from their government by protesting. And what did our dear leader do? What did our president, our unitary executive do? Well, he put out a video of him flying a plane and he's going over New York City and dropping, it appears to be, large loads of fecal matter on protesters. And I got to imagine that he spent a lot of time on this video. I'm not doing much else. I got to imagine that this really was his answer to this. But understand, those people in the streets that he's dumping on, kind of symbolic for me, because those are working people. Those are working class Americans who are trying to, like everybody else, trying to make a living. And this is where the reality and the road come together, especially for my red hat folks. The people in that crowd are angry, too. They're angry that prices are too high. They're angry that wages are too low. They're angry that healthcare is almost non-existent for a large population. They're angry that our government is being used against them. They're angry at all of the things that this administration is doing to upend what's left of the 20th century. They're angry, like you, but they're trying to do something constructive. They're trying to organize around, how do we make this a place of, for, and by we the people? How do working people get a fair shake? And this is where I wish we would spend more energy. Instead of sophomoric, moronic videos like Trump put out, and what the right kept, again, the massive division coming out of the right, I wish they would spend more time on actually making people's lives better, actually lowering costs, actually giving people the ability to organize and collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions, instead of doing what Trump is actually doing, and that is stealing collective bargaining rights and destroying jobs. But hey, he made a funny video. He made a video. That's something, right? Want to hear your thoughts? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, had a lot of conversations with people over the weekend who attended the No Kings rallies, and as I said, extraordinarily peaceful. And again, for what we were told by Speaker Johnson and the Republicans was just a bunch of Antifa card-carrying American haters. There was going to be violence everywhere. They called out the National Guard in Texas. It was supposed to be It was supposed to be January 6th, part two. It was supposed to be the liberal side of burning and beating and what I think nationwide, 50 arrests maybe? Didn't live up to the Republican hype, but did get lots of people out into the streets. And one of those people, my good friend David Bohrer, he's a labor attorney and one of my go-to guys to talk about everything that is labor, especially in this moment of no kings, no crowns, no thrones, and all of that. David's a labor attorney. As I said, one of my favorite guys. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me on.
So let's start here. You hate America, right? I mean, you were there. You showed up. Yeah. You're one of those Antifa card-carrying, violent American haters. Yeah.
You know, I've never seen so many inflatable unicorns and dinosaurs and frogs in my entire life. It was like some weird hippie festival. There was no violence. It was all silly and singing and chanting and exercising our freedom of assembly. No violence whatsoever.
Now, here's the thing. And this is the point I got thrown back at me, since there was no violence and there should have been, because, you know, the founding of the country was violent because we were overthrowing the king. If there was no violence, is there really a king? That's the response I got. I swear. The response I got is there was no violence. So, you know, the king let them have their rally. I'm going, yeah, because there were literally millions of people out in the streets.
Yeah. I mean, that's just an ignorant thing to say. That almost invites violence, doesn't it? And they're too stupid to realize that's what they're saying. So, look, he's not a king. He doesn't wear an actual crown, although he's like posted pictures of himself, and Vance posted a picture of him with a crown on. And he posted a video of himself flying a jet plane with dumping feces on the crowd. I mean, he may not be a king, but he's certainly a clown. The lack of violence is a testament to our side's patriotism and our commitment to this country and our commitment to freedom of speech. Yeah. And it's in stark contrast to what we saw from the other side on January 6th.
No, I mean, the AI stuff that they put out is, you know, I don't know how you can defend it. And look, I've had people try, oh, he's just joking around. I'm tired of hearing, I can't take a joke. When you go, this is the president of the United States. This is the highest office in the land, the most powerful guy in the country. I think I want someone a little less sophomoric, a little less childish in that position. I want somebody who's going to aspire to make us better instead of gutter humor or locker room talk or however you want to frame it. Sorry, I'm not coming along with that thought.
Yeah, you know, saying you want a little less of that is an understatement, Rick. I want a lot less of it. This past week, there was video where he used the F word on purpose and with feeling. And so my teenager is asking, oh, can I use it now? The president of the United States said it. And, you know, what kind of stupid example is that to set? If you think some of the presidents we've had on both sides in the past who were, you know, respected the office and respected people and knew how to act in public. And then you bring in this clown. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, and you know, the weird thing is I had people sending me, this is the weird thing. I had people sending me images from the rally of, you know, signs that had vulgarity on it. And I'm like, dude, I had a neighbor for 4 years have an F. Biden flag flying in his front yard. I look at the back window of every pickup truck that drives through my neighborhood and some of the vulgarity and the worst intentions and the worst. And you're going to come to me with a cardboard sign of people saying that Trump's a dictator and that we don't want dictators. Give me a break. But here's the thing.
This is the thing. It's just stupid. And look, I saw something on the web the other day. If you don't want to be called a fascist, doing fascism, you know, we're criticizing them on the merits of some of the stuff they're doing, right? They're ignoring the rule of law, for God's sake. That's never happened before. They're ignoring the international law of the sea, blowing boats up without any cause. They're you know, firing federal employees willy-nilly. And the list is a mile long. You've got ICE, you know, arresting civilians. You've got ICE and the federal agents setting off flashbangs in people's apartments. Quit doing fascism and we'll stop calling you a bunch of fascists.
Stop. Exactly. It's not that hard to do. You could probably get what you wanted. Pretty simple. But here's the thing, and this is where I go back to the campaign. I had a lot of people saying, you know, Rick, I just want the government to run like a business. And this is how Trump runs his business. This is the kind of thing that you expect from a CEO, a dictator, because in every workplace, you've got master and servant. So am I surprised that he treats workers the way he does? No. Am I surprised that he's as belligerent as he is? No, because I've seen those guys. I know what corporate governance looks like. And oh, by the way, we've seen what he's done with his businesses and how quickly he's bankrupted a lot of them. This is our future, David.
Yeah, you know, first of all, the government's not a business, and we could do a whole show about that. It's not a business, and saying it's to be run by a business is just propaganda that was put together by, you know, the Chamber of Commerce. But, you know, you certainly don't want it to run like his businesses. You know, in New York, the world capital of capitalism, he was a joke. Other business people thought he was just a joke. He couldn't run a business. He would stiff not only his workers, but all the vendors and contractors and suppliers. You know, everybody he dealt with, he tried to screw them out of their money.
Yeah.
And, you know, is that how you want a country run? Of course not.
As long as it's somebody else. But let's get to the big rally. Because millions of people, I mean, the videos that I've seen, the images on social media, the news, you know, just massive crowds of people, millions nationwide who came out to say, look, we don't want a king. We don't want an authoritarian. We don't want a dictator. You know, from your perspective, from a legal perspective, how do these demonstrations that we're seeing, how do these rallies, how does this intersect with workers organizing? How do we use this to, one, defend democracy, absolutely, but two, make lives better? Because that, to me, was the theme of all of this. There's a lot of anger out into the world right now while Trump's off, you know, doing whatever he's doing. Prices aren't coming down. Eggs aren't down. The cost of living is getting worse. Insurance costs are through the, all the things that we told he was going to fix on day one, not better. How do we use this moment to do some of that?
Right. It's like we always say in union organizing, the boss is our best ally, right? The if you've got a boss like this, who's constantly mistreating people, and in this case, the entire population in the United States, then that's going to spur organizing. And so we've seen, you know, the first No Kings rally, I think, had just short of 5 million people come out. This time we had 7 million people come out nationwide. It's growing. And that's not because he's an embarrassment. I mean, that's, I'm sure some people are motivated by that, but it's mostly because of the kind of things you said. Prices are up when he said they would come down. You know, gas costs more when he said it would come down. They would cut Medicare when they said they wouldn't touch it. They cut Medicaid when they said they wouldn't touch it. They shut down the government when they said they wouldn't shut it down. You know, people are responding to this because it affects their lives. People are worried, you know, how am I going to, you know, buy my medicine because he cut me off of Medicare? And that's motivating people. And the more he keeps it up, the more millions of people you're going to see in the street.
Yeah, no, as we've been saying for the longest time here, the more the suffering trickles down, the more people struggle, the more they're going to be drawn to the streets. And look, they're going to continue doing all of the worst stuff. The cruelty, obviously, is the point. So these rallies to me, this organizing to me is crucial If you could look back 100 years ago, what are my grandparents and great-grandparents' generation were doing? They were organizing in times of misery. And the idea was always the same. Better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities. And that's right. The constant.
Yep, that's right. And people that don't study history don't know, but for example, I've read a lot about the eight-hour movement back in the late 19th century, early 20th century. And people think, at some point we just went to the eight-hour day. Well, no, there was 80 years spent organizing for the eight-hour day, 80 years in the U.S. And people died, people marched, people rallied, people were shot at, people were fired. And it took 80 years, but we eventually, by persistence and by ever-growing numbers, won the eight-hour day. And ever since we did, the corporate class has been trying to take it away from us. You'd play hell today trying to find two people in a row who work an eight-hour day. That's a thing of the past. So all of these things are subject to our ability to organize and mobilize people. And the kind of crazy stuff that they're imposing is going to help in that effort. And when we reach a critical mass, it's all going to come tumbling down. Yeah. I'm not talking about overturning the government. I'm talking about it'll become untenable for the Republicans to continue on this path of destruction.
And look, you know, all the things that FDR did, and I say this all the time, all of the positive things that came out of the New Deal, FDR didn't do out of the benevolence and goodness of his heart. He did because my grandparents and great-grandparents were ripping this country apart brick by brick. They were filling the streets. They were making demands. And he, as a tool of we the people, did what they wanted in these cases. And that's how we built the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity. And that's how we can take for granted all of the things that they handed off for generations. But sadly, this administration's taken away.
Yeah, look at 1934, less than 5 years into the Great Depression, and there were general strikes all around the country. There's a general strike in Toledo. There's a general strike in Seattle. There's a general strike in San Francisco. There was a general strike in Minneapolis, all in 1934. And what happened then? Oh, gee, all of a sudden, things got moving in Washington, and we saw the greatest, series of social legislation in the history of our country. Yep. Come through, not because of somebody's benevolence, but because people were in the streets demanding change.
No, and this is where I asked at the beginning of the year, is this going to be or next year going to be that 1934 moment where workers finally realize that we've been living through a generation of record corporate profits? We've been living through the growth of the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity, while simultaneously they're gutting every bit of the safety net that we've got. They're taking food out of the mouths of children, kicking vets to the curb, doing all of these horrible things, all in the name of we've got to kill it so we can save it, but still got to give profits to the corporations and the rich people. And yet we've bought it. And I got to think there's a moment, David, that, we're not going to buy it anymore.
Yeah. Back, it's 30 years ago now, but back the first time gasoline hit $4 a gallon, this is in the 80s, I saw on PBS, on the old McNeil Air Report, they had an oil company executive on who said, we always thought that long before gas got to $4 a gallon, we'd have riots in the street. And he was obviously very pleased that they got it to $4 a gallon without having any riots in the street. But that's how these guys think. They're over there. They'll push it as far as they can. And they don't want to riot in the street. So they might pull up just short of that. But by God, they're going to push it as far as they can. Now some of them are so scared they're building, underground bunkers in New Zealand to escape to if the working class rises up here at home.
So are we in a moment, David, where you know that 1934 moment happens? Because I'm talking to people, and you know they want it. They want a movement that's going to lead in a direction that's going to gonna create the environment for that. I mean, ultimately, it has to come from the working class up. But there've got to be some voices out there calling for it. And, last week we had Randy Corgan from the Teamsters on saying, it's time to abandon the job and get to the streets. Thoughts?
Yeah. I saw an awful lot of general strike signs downtown yesterday. We didn't see those at the first No Kings rally. So I think sentiment is growing in that direction. We saw with the last government shutdown, the president of the Flight Attendants Union, who was a good friend of mine, made a call for a general strike and sort of lit the media on fire because nobody in labor leadership had said those words in 50 years. Yep. And that's continuing to build now. We just had over the weekend at the No Kings rally in Chicago, the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, called for a general strike. Of course, he comes out of the CTU, and he knows what he's talking about.
No, it's about time. And look, the courts aren't going to save us. I know last week we talked about a judge ruling that Trump is willy-nilly firing people is illegal, and it's being done by people who likely don't believe the laws apply to them. But, Trump and company are still getting away with making lives worse. There are still millions of people who lost a paycheck, haven't gotten paid because this shutdown's gone on. There's so much chaos going on. I fear the only way that we rein that chaos in is to create some of our own.
Absolutely. Brandon Johnson mentioned it, but you've had voices, even mainstream people, David Brooks from the New York Times, had said it might be time for a mass movement to stop what's going on in the White House. And other voices around the country calling for the same thing. So it's building. As an old union activist, and I know as one myself, strikes don't organize themselves. That's some hard work, and it takes, first of all, sufficient motivation to get people to put their jobs on the line, but it also takes an awful lot of logistical preparations and planning and communications and all of those things. I'm starting to see some of that stuff underway, and maybe we're going to get there real soon. I know there are a lot of people thinking about it, strategizing about it, and planning for the day when the time is right.
Yeah, which is why you got people like Mark Cuban out there going, maybe it's time for the corporations and rich people to start sharing a little. And which I thought was cute. Maybe 20 years, 30, 40 years too late. But I think even he sees what's coming, and that is anger that is very real on both sides of the political equation. And if those two sides ever found each other, if we stopped hating on each other, maybe we could really put that energy of I got to win and you have to lose into how do we both do better? Maybe there's a chance for the country.
Yeah, you got to hope, huh? It's, the other one that always stuck in my mind, it's 3 or 4 years ago now, but the business roundtable came out, and there couldn't be a more capitalist conservative group than the business roundtable.
Yep.
They came out and said,
August 2019.
They came out and said, maybe this whole maximizing shareholder value thing needs to change, and we need to, take care of some of the other stakeholders' interests as well. They're all worried that this might boil over. And I learned early on when I was organizing that, the people in management and the corporate types always think of labor as like a conspiracy aimed at their undoing. And so I've always advised, act like it's a conspiracy, stoke that fear on their side. We got to make, they don't hesitate to, make our people fearful.
Yeah.
This guy Vogt in the Trump administration said, you know, he wants federal employees to wake up every day traumatized. Well, two can play that game. You know, we start organizing around a general strike and start making, you know, public plans for carrying it out. It's going to scare the bejesus out of these guys.
No, and that's the hope. That's the hope of this rally and the organizing that's going to continue out of this. Because what's coming next, you know, is that taking stuff home, networking, growing. For me, this is just, again, the next step in what hopefully will come. But, David, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts. Good on you for getting out and fighting the good fight. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks for having me on again, Rick. I appreciate it.
Good stuff, as always, our good friend David Bohr. You can check out the website, gelawyer.com. He's a labor attorney there at Gilbert Employment Law. I want to hear your thoughts. Did you get out? Did you happen to find a rally somewhere? I want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.7 WRCE.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight and tomorrow, mostly cloudy, passing showers, cold and windy. Temps drop through the 40s tonight and remain there through your Tuesday afternoon. At times, wind gusts above 30 miles an hour. Temps slowly warm through the rest of the week. Currently 54 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Don't often agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene. They asked her about Congress being shut down and how it related to the Epstein files.
Why drag this out? That is going to have 218 signatures. I say go ahead and do it and get it over with.
Trivia? She's not necessarily my cup of tea, but she reads tea leaves. I think her moving to where she's at says that when that vote happens, there are going to be a major dam break, and it's a problem.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, dear leader commuted the sentence of one of his top two favorite drag queens. I'm going to put George Santos in running with Rudy Giuliani as Trump's number one and number two. Not sure which one's his favorite, but yeah, two drag queens. Evidently commuted his 87-month sentence after just 84 days. And I'm like, really? And then right away, he's back on Fox and Friends and State of the Union on CNN. And yeah, What's wrong with our media? Here to share some thoughts on, well, the commutation or the get-out-of-jail-free card. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm good. You know, look, lucky stuff like that never happens. If I was going to be sentenced to jail, I'd probably serve twice as much. You know, how is it this guy who clearly was found guilty, clearly was not all that great of a politician. How does this guy get his sentence commuted?
He played it exactly like Donald Trump did. He has basically spent the last, you know, several months talking about the Biden Justice Department being after him, talking about being the victim of Democrats, being somehow. The target of Democrats and he took the Trump playbook and just deployed it to his situation. And it made sense just coming from a perspective of once you can get Donald Trump to hear those things from your side, like on Fox or whatever, then, you know, of course he's going to pardon George Santos because he sees himself in George Santos.
So I guess the question then becomes is, you know, like Giselle Maxwell, did she just not play her cards right? Didn't she play the victim card enough? Because I've always said that, you know, conservatives, you know, play the victim card better than anyone. Maybe a lesson there, I guess. I don't know.
The jury's still out on that, honestly. Like, I wonder if he will do it his last day in office. Because I think if he did it now, I mean, I think he'd lose his MAGA completely.
Yeah, because here's the thing. We've got the government shut down, what, 19, 20 days, something like that? All because, look, I don't think this has anything to do with, on the Republican side, anything to do about health care or any budgets or anything. I think this is all just making sure that there's no vote on the Epstein files and no one gets to see it. And they can blame Democrats for wanting to keep people with health insurance from going, see, well, they won't let us. It seems convenient.
No, I completely agree. And that's the reason that Johnson won't swear in Grijalva from after she won in Arizona. And I think the problem that he has is that he did it already to the two Republicans that were from Florida. He did it in a pro forma session. So if he wanted to, he could just follow that same rule that he made for himself, where you swear somebody in during a pro forma session, even though we're in a shutdown. And so I think, like, we've already seen the Attorney General of Arizona send a letter. I think that is obviously step one to the court filing. I think that is going to happen probably this week, because you're basically doing taxation without representation. Like, you are robbing the people of their representation. And Johnson has said a couple of things where he's like, well, she can go into her office and do her job. Yeah, she has the keys to her office. They won't turn on the phones. They won't give you access to the email, to the official emails and the constituent information, because she's not sworn in. So you really can't help anybody whenever you don't have access to any kind of file or information or any phone. So, I mean, I think, but again, like, the second that she is sworn in, she becomes the 218th signature on the discharge petition to force a vote on the Epstein files. And that's the last thing Johnson wants.
This should be an organizing campaign by Democrats to go get her in, because, look, you want the Epstein files, here's the way it happens. Because I think everybody, I've yet to meet anyone who goes, no, I don't want to see them. Everybody I know, red hat, blue hat, no hat, everyone's like, yeah, I want to see them.
I wonder to what extent Democrats are playing this as some kind of winning game where they think, okay, we've found an issue. It works really well. The longer they draw this out, the worse it is for them, the better it is for us. Because the approval ratings are falling and falling for Republicans. And I just don't know if Democrats have stepped too far into this idea of, you know, we can just keep this thing going forever, this train going.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
No, good luck with it, because, look, people are angry.
Figure out what the tipping point is, because
it's getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah.
Because, look, everybody I talk to, it doesn't matter. Angry. There's anger everywhere. And if someone can harness that anger and move it in a mm-hmm. in a constructive direction, maybe we could do some things. But look, you know, I go back to the Jay Gould quote, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. I look at the mm-hmm. weekend, you got a bunch of old white guys going out in front of millions of people, you know, trying to antagonize the people who showed up to the No Kings rally. Surprisingly, you know, none of them really got anything happened to them, which is kind of shocking to me. But something like 50 arrests nationwide, that's it, out of millions of people in the streets?
7 million people. 7 million people. And the best signs. I mean, you know how I feel about protest signs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love that people got out because and especially because they were all around the country. This isn't just a Washington, D.C. thing. I love seeing representative democracy in places of the country that you don't expect it. Boise, Idaho, huge, huge crowd. Topeka, Kansas, huge crowd. People brought their dogs out. And so there was a little poodle with a bone-shaped sign that says, I poop on fascism. And then there was I saw a golden retriever with a bone sign that said, hate abortion, neuter yourself. The one that I really, really loved, and this seems like it popped up in a bunch of different cities, was women carrying signs with butterfly pictures saying, this is the only orange monarch that I like because of the monarch butterfly. I was like, that's a good one. I love a good pun on a protest sign.
No, and the weird thing is, I got a number of people reaching out to me, you know, sending signs that have, you know, F Trump and all of this stuff. And they're like, can you believe this? Can you believe how vulgar this? And I'm going, dude, I lived in a neighborhood with a guy who had an F Biden flag flying from his flagpole without an American flag anywhere near it for 4 years. I live in a place where people driving by with their pickup trucks have a window full of vulgarity and threats and intimidation and all of that. You're afraid of a little sign that says we don't like fascists? Really? And the answer is yeah, because their minds don't well work.
I still see F Biden bumper stickers in Oklahoma. And I mean, you would think that people in Oklahoma would be more polite about not using the F word. I mean, they could say, I hate Biden or put like a little asterisk in there, because people, you know, in the South try to be polite in their racism or their bigotry or their hatred, right? Which is how Bless Your Heart came to be. I keep seeing all of the F-bomb posters, and that's all fine and good, but you know, the clever ones. And in DC, of course, they had tons that were very specific government related. Like, you know, I got fired from the federal government and all I got was fascism, you know, stuff like that.
I love the creativity. That's why Portland to me is so incredible. Because look, evidently the inflatables sold out because people are showing up in inflatable costumes. I mean, just, you know, I saw some posters with frogs on them. I go, you know, I would love to have some of those frog posters to put in my studio because they're just so well done and so poignant and so in the moment. And look, and not just, you know, crude. And that's what I like. Put a little thought into it. A little creativity in democracy.
Absolutely. The cool thing about the frogs is now we've sort of taken back the frog, because remember in 15 and 16, it became this QAnon symbol. Pepe the Frog became this MAGA QAnon whatever symbol. And so now this idea of the inflatables taking over the frog again, I think that's perfect. And the thing about Portland is all of their, like, they did a naked bike ride. That is like the most Portland protest I've ever heard of. It's a naked bike ride for peace.
And I love that, you know, because the weird thing is, and maybe you'll come along with me, because, you know, I remember when Joe Biden, you know, said this was a big blanking deal and, you know, everyone lost their minds. Oh, my God, can you believe he said that? And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of surprised he did. I get the emphasis. I get you're at a rally, you know, kind of thing. I get you're in that moment. But now it's, well, I don't like where we're heading. I don't like that politicians now feel the need to have to. I look at, what was it, on Friday? Trump dropped the F-bomb on TV during during a state thing. I'm going, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that it's a good thing.
Yeah, he was talking about Venezuela. He had a Latin American reporter who was asking him questions about the reports that we've seen that Trump has sent CIA people into Venezuela. They haven't said what they're doing in Venezuela. It used to be like over the last couple of weeks, he's been bombing, you know, boats off the coast of Venezuela, but it's been outside, you know, their actual waters. Now he's sent people into the country, which is like, if you're talking about doing some sort of violent action inside the country, then you're going to start a war. And I think thinking about what that turns into, I mean, basically you end up playing that out. It's China and Russia are basically going to throw all of their money at Venezuela to fight with the US. And because right now, obviously, Venezuela couldn't go to war with the United States. I mean, nobody can go to war with the United States. We spend the majority of our budget on defense and they can't feed their people. So I think, you know, what's surprising to me is that what Trump was talking about in that press conference is Maduro has offered him literally everything. He's offered him access to all of the oil in the country, access to all of the rare minerals in the entire country. And what the reporter was saying is, you know, he's offered you everything And Trump was like, yeah, yeah, he has. And I don't want it. I want to, you know, go to war or whatever. And then he dropped, you know, dropped the F-bomb, which is how you always know Trump's telling the truth.
No, and this is again, remember, my Red Hat friends all said the number one thing they liked about Trump, he didn't start a war. Kind of looks like he wants to. But here again, this kind of coarse kind of rhetoric, I do think, plays well with the base. Because they want a guy who tells it like it is, Sarah. They want a guy, a tough guy. And I know that there are a lot of Republicans who are uncomfortable with this and silent. And, you know, I got to wonder if they ever pay a price for what they're doing, or are we just going to continue heading down just this horrible path?
I mean, I think we head down the horrible path until finally, you know, there's a train at the end of it. Right. I think in terms of what I see in the pendulum swinging back, you hope that it will. And that's the one thing that I read about this week. Sarah Longwell, who's been doing these amazing riveting focus groups with Trump people, Trump voters, who have, you know, who are not like hardcore MAGA, but have backed away from Trump in the subsequent 9 months that we've been through now. And so there are people who are saying that he's gone too far on a lot of stuff. But her comment has always been, you know, these Republicans are taking it to the extreme, and there is going to be a pendulum that swings back. And when that happens, you know, Republicans have to hope that Democrats will not basically do the exact same thing that Donald Trump has been doing with the Justice Department and all of this stuff to them.
No, and I'll tell you, they won't, because they haven't, and I don't think Democrats will. I think they believe in the rule of law and still have this, we're playing by the rules. When they go low, we go high nonsense. Because look, 2008, Obama had the ability to basically do anything that they wanted. They could have gotten a real progressive New Deal-esque kind of agenda through after the Bush years, and they chose half measures as opposed to actually swinging the pendulum back to the side of progressive liberal policy. And I fear they never pay the price, and Democrats never swing that pendulum. I hope I'm wrong, but that's where I'm at.
No, I think you're 100% right. I think Democrats look at this situation and, you know, I think a lot of us want to see some kind of legal consequences for this. And the problem is that Democrats would get into whatever power they have and be like, you know, oh, we're going to move on. This is going to be like the reconstruction of, you know, the country's been torn apart. And this is the kind of thing that keeps happening, where you look at what happened with Nixon, and yep. I want to argue that I think Republicans can get away with corruption now because they looked at Nixon and was like, well, you know, we'll get a Republican then there.
Not just Nixon, man. Reagan, HW.
Yeah. So
that whole, just let sleeping
again.
Dogs lie.
And I mean, I think we do that to our detriment. There should be, you know, tribunals. It should be an accounting for the things that you have done that are very clearly illegal. And there should be epic reform.
Absolutely.
Every single part of government, starting with the Supreme Court.
No, look, I think Obama missed a major opportunity to go after Wall Street. How many of those corporate crooks did they indict? I think one. Mm-hmm. I think one guy, Raj something or other. I don't remember what his name was. But they didn't go after all of the criminals. How many Lehman Brothers executives ended up behind bars? How many Bear Stearns? How many of those people who literally brought this country to almost to its economic knees? How many of those people ended up perp walked? None.
And there are economists now who are kind of sounding the alarm about the AI movement being a bubble. And so it's like, And again, we're in a housing situation where housing isn't affordable and people are going to try and take out, you know, absurd loans that they shouldn't be allowed to take out and get stuck again in screwed up mortgages. and we're going to have, you know, it's going to be another bubble that bursts. And, you know, again, like where there was no accountability for the crash in 07 and 08. So of course they're going to assume that there's not going to be any accountability this time around if they are doing shady stuff again.
And look, you know, as part of the states cannot regulate AI for a decade, which means it is the Wild West, which is why you're creating this massive bubble. Because look, all these corporations see this as an opportunity to do one thing, replace us with people who don't need, with things that don't need to sleep and can make them huge profits.
And the thing you keep seeing from a lot of these corporate, you know, AI company people is that they're trying to spin that as a really good thing, because now you can have folks who spend more time on their creativity and learning things that they wouldn't normally have learned otherwise. And it's like, oh yeah, you're basically going to abandon the public, leave them out to drive. Nobody can get a job. And you think that people are going to be like, oh, well, I can finally learn to knit now.
Well, I got to tell you, Sarah, I got to be honest. I'm going to side with them a little bit on this one. I have actually been reading and trying to figure out how to do small acreage farming. I'm trying to figure out how to take that garden in my backyard and be able to survive off of it, because there may not be jobs. We may all be little farmers, not for sale, but for our own survival.
Our little freedom gardens.
Freedom gardens. If they allow us to keep the water. Now, you may do like some other countries have done, and you can't collect rainwater or any of that stuff because we've privatized all of our water. While you still can, we could maybe learn, I don't know, can we make water?
Right, we can just start processing our own bathroom water and cleaning it like they do on the space station.
You know, every time I think of that, you know the movie Idiocracy, which now now looks like a documentary. And if you haven't seen the movie, the documentary Idiocracy, I highly suggest go take a look at it. For years, I was saying it wasn't well done enough because it could have been more absurd. But, you know, that's when I thought of it as a movie. Now it's an actual documentary because it's what we are living. And my favorite line out of there is where the smartest guy in the world goes, well, maybe if we didn't put sports drinks on the crops and we used water, the crops might grow. And the guy goes like, you mean like out of the toilet? Yeah, like out of the toilet.
Oh, my God. God help us.
Because Brondo has electrolytes. It's what plants crave.
Right, obviously. I mean, honestly, if you pour like a monster out on your crops, then they're going to be so hyped up they'll grow faster.
They will have bigger crops.
That's just science, well, Rick.
Anger crops. Jeez. Oh my gosh. Last question I've got for you. Obviously, the big rallies over the weekend were historic. Got a lot of media attention. You see anything coming of these? You see any good organizing? See anything coming other than the good signs? Anything coming, you think?
I think if you can continue that enthusiasm and it becomes a much larger thing. I know there were a couple of rallies where they were really trying to do voter registration there. I think that that's going to be the most important thing that would come out of any of these things, because we're now in a fight for election rights for 2026. And so the more I think that we can get people registered and situated so that they're going to have all of the right documents to vote, that's going to be the most important in the next year.
Amen. Right there. Sarah, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. Sarah Burris, Raw Story, rawstory.com. Thanks.
Thanks. Have a good week, everyone.
I want to hear your thoughts. If you got out to the rally, what'd you see? What'd you do? And are you going to pick it up on the other side now that we're post-rally? What's the plan? Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. Want to hear it. Going to take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1926. That was the day that one of the great labor leaders in U.S. history, Eugene V. Debs, died in Elmhurst, Illinois. In 1894, Debs gained national attention when his American Railway Union launched a boycott in support of the striking workers of the Pullman Palace Car Company. The strike and the boycott were crushed by federal troops and a federal court. Debs served 6 months in jail for his role in the boycott. Later, Debs would again go to jail for standing up for his beliefs. He was convicted for speaking out against U.S. involvement in World War I. He was among the founders of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, in 1905. He ran as a socialist for President of the United States 5 times, receiving nearly 1 million votes running his campaign from a prison cell in 1920. In 1891, Debs wrote an article for the Locomotive Fireman's Magazine titled The Unity of Labor. His words stand as an eloquent case for worker solidarity. Debs wrote, quote, "If working men were united in sympathetic bonds, if a bricklayer could comprehend the fact that he is dependent on the hod carrier, if the locomotive engineer could grasp the fact that he is dependent on the locomotive fireman, the interdependence of labor would at once constitute a bond of union, a chain whose link, forged and fashioned to hold working men in harmonious alliance, would girt them with a defense in every time of trouble and resist invasion, though assailed by all the plutocrats that ever cursed the earth." Debs spent his life trying to bring about this harmonious alliance of working people and standing up for the causes of peace and justice. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So one of the interesting things about, and I'm interested to see how it comes out after the obviously the rally's over, and what the Trump FBI, what they're going to do with all of the information that they gathered. Because, you know, one of the stories that I found really interesting in all of this comes out of, you know, the surveillance that is reportedly being used, the kind of facial recognition software, the kind of data collection, cell phone hacking, the kind of geolocation stuff. They know who showed up. And the amazing thing is we carry this beacon around with us, this information center that they can get whatever they want out of. And there's part of me that goes, that's a good thing, maybe. But it's also maybe not a great thing. It may be something we should be, as a society, kind of thinking about. Because, you know, my red hat friends all during the 24 election were, Democrats are going to bring social credit scores. And they're going to, you know, they're going to punish us for being the evil you-know-whats that we are. And I'm like, no, they're not going to do that. They'll let you be as stupid as you want to be. That's called freedom. You're allowed to be an idiot. God bless you. Do your thing. Just, you have the right to do whatever, just as long as it doesn't affect me or anyone else. You could go in the woods and scream all the, you know, racist nonsense you want to. You know, good for you. But until it affects somebody else, then we got a problem. Now the weird thing is you got all this digital stuff. And I think some Republican racists are figuring that out. Oops. That my grandfather, who told me when I was a kid, don't write anything down that you don't want your grandmother to read, was absolutely, positively, 100% right. But here you are. Now, the weird thing for me in all of this is what Sarah and I were talking about. The difference between Republicans and Democrats is Republicans never back up, never apologize. And when they do, they get fired and they move on. As long as they play the victim card really well, as long as they deny and deflect, they're going to be fine. It's Democrats, and this is true. Democrats are always apologizing for things when they get themselves in a twist. And maybe they shouldn't a little bit. Maybe they should, I don't know, ball up the digits a little and fight back, especially in this moment. I think this weekend was a good first start. Millions of people out in the street. Millions of people talking to each other, marching with each other, networking, making friends. Who would have thought? See, I said a while ago, Trump was going to be the great uniter. He was going to unite the country, hopefully against him. And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing a nation beginning to come together to believe in that life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. No more kings. Interesting times. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Stephanie Officer. As the federal government remains shut down, Emergency Secretary Chris Wright announced the National Nuclear Security Administration, the agency overseeing the country's nuclear stockpile, has begun furloughing employees today as a result. During a visit to a national security site in Mercury, Nevada, Wright confirmed hundreds of workers have been informed of their status.
Across the National Nuclear Security Administration, we've had to furlough 1,400 employees across the country.
Now, despite the furlough, Wright insists the furloughs do not pose an immediate threat to national security, and they have enough emergency employees to secure the current nuclear stockpile. Nicolas Sarkozy will become the first former French president in recent memory to be imprisoned when he's expected to begin a 5-year sentence Tuesday in Paris. Convicted of criminal conspiracy in a scheme to finance his 2007 election campaign with funds from Libya, Sarkozy maintains his innocence. This is ABC News. A new